Hello everyone, I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase, and today I'm going to help you accomplish something you always wanted to do, and that's total galactic domination on this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield! Okay, welcome back as we continue Season 2 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And what I've been up to for the past 2 months has been writing a few articles about StarCraft. They're basically strategy articles, kind of giving you some ideas about, well, so far they've been to the point of getting ready up to the start of the game. So we haven't actually done a whole lot of in-game strategy, but there's been some choosing a faction, setting up the galaxy, and actually then kind of planning your path of conquest throughout the galaxy in front of you. And of course, this all applies to StarCraft, the board game by Fantasy Flight Games. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to go ahead and take a deeper look inside these articles and actually show you some more examples, basically make up some numbers to support my opinions, and analyze the various factions a little more in depth. And then if I got time, I'll probably talk about some general thought tactics that I'm actually planning out your turn. Individual specific faction tactics will probably come later when I can get myself, Kyle, and Ryan all back together, because obviously I normally play as a Zerg, though I've played as a Protoss. Kyle plays mostly Terran, though he plays as a Protoss from time to time. And Ryan's played pure Protoss, so we kind of need to get us all on here. I'd provide the Zerg tactics, Kyle would be the Terrans, and Ryan would be the Protoss. But that'll come later in a future episode. This is kind of a whole little very analysis of a lot of the details of StarCraft, at least the pre-planning of the game. So the first article is about choosing a faction. And what I did was I went in and took a look at all the different special victory conditions about the different factions, and basically asked the question, can you accomplish these special victory conditions controlling only two planets? Because you know, if you've played this game already, you know that when you start the game off, each player contributes two planets to the galaxy. So I looked at each of the six factions, can you actually win controlling only two planets? Some were yes, some were maybe, some were no. And then I asked the question, so can you win controlling two planets, plus maybe having a beachhead of one or two regions on a third planet? And the answer across the board was all yes. So that brings an interesting point about StarCraft, the board game, where it kind of differs in your overall tactics from other games. The reality is your object is almost not to actually work for your own victory. It's kind of odd to think about that, because most games obviously want to try to win victory as quickly as possible. But the problem with StarCraft, the board game, is just about every faction's special victory is really pretty easy to obtain. So it's actually quite possible as the game progresses, if two players are kind of being very non-aggressive towards each other, both can actually achieve their special victories. And therefore, when it comes down to Stage 3, when all the special victories come into play, it's really going to come down to other factors than just actually who got their special victory. So what you want to really do is not so much play for you to win, but play to punish your opponents, to keep them from winning. Because not only does that obviously deny them regions where they need to capture to expand and win their special victories, but also one's going to give you more resources to build your army up. And really, in the process, if you're just punishing your opponents, eventually you're going to reach a point where you have enough regions to control to win your special victory, whatever it may be for your faction. So what we're going to do here is take a more in-depth look at the individual factions, specifically by number. I basically made up a bunch of statistics, so yeah, I know, we all know the old joke that 69% of all statistics are made up. Well, after I'm done here, we're going to probably bump that 69 up to 70 or 71%, because I literally made up these facts last night. And what I did is I basically made up my own equations to kind of compare the factions from each other, and it kind of shows a little bit about what their good abilities are, where they're weak, and kind of how to play with them a little bit. So let's take a look here. We've got to see how this place is a Zerg, Terran, and Protoss on my board here. Let's go with just total figure count. So this includes the number of miniatures that each faction has available to it. So each Terran faction has a total of 30 figures available to it. Zerg has the most, where they come in at 33. Actually, these are total. And then Protoss has the least. They come in at only 27. So it's not a huge difference. But what you'll see that'll work out to be is about that the Azura can kind of, quote, control, I'm using air quotes there, two more regions than, say, either the Protoss and one more region than the Terrans. Though, one thing I consider here is you got to consider support units. Like, you know, the Terrans have their science vessel, the Zerg have the Queen and the Defiler, and the Protoss have the Arbiter and the Templars. The problem comes in is those don't make very good defense units. Because, you know, they need to have specific cards to really take advantage and really destroy the enemy. So you're going to use those more in a situation where you're on the offensive and you're attacking people. So considering that, let's take an account of those support units, subtract them from the total count, and see how many really true straight up frontline military units each faction has. So of the 30 Terran figures, they only have 3 science vessels. So we can go ahead and let's subtract off 3 for the science vessels, so for support. That leaves them with effectively 27, what I'm going to call defensible troops. You'll see why I say defensible for the Terrans in a minute. The Protoss now, they have 6, because they have 3 Arbiters and 3 Templars. So let's subtract off their 6 support units. And that's going to leave them with a whopping 21 units. So you're going to find they're going to be in the worst case scenario for holding ground, in terms of numerically holding ground. Now the Zerg have 3 Defilers and 3 Queens, so they also have 6 support units. So that leaves them with 27 units total. And let's jump back to Terrans for a minute. I said 27 defensible units. The reason I said that is because you also got to figure out the Terrans have 3 ghost figures, which, for the price you're going to pay for them, they're not very good frontline fighters. They're not much better than, actually, if I look at the stats here, they're actually not any better than the Marines, but they're twice the cost. But the thing is, remember, they have the cool ability, nuke, they can bring the lockdown, so they have a lot of special offensive abilities. But so they are, basically, for attacking purposes, they are, quote, more of a support-style unit. In fact, they rely on special abilities. But unlike the normal assist units, they actually can defend themselves fairly well, whereas the assist units can't do nearly as good job of defending themselves. So we're going to subtract off 3 more for the Terrans. We're going to call these guys to be the Ghosts. So they have 27 defensible units and effectively 24 offensive units. So just kind of looking over these numbers, what does this show us? Well, we're going to make a few assumptions here. On average, it's on average, each planet maybe allows you to have fully stocked 10 units. So obviously some, like here, Bracken is only 9. And some of the 4 planets might be upwards of 12 or 13. So it's kind of just balance it out. So let's go ahead and we're going to assume now 10 units per planet. So do some quick math here. Divide these all by 10. Zerg can approximately control effectively 2.5 to maybe 3 planets, depending on the actual size. The Terran forces now with only 24. Well, we're going to use 27 defensible units. They're going to be around the same. So they got maybe about 2.5 to 3 planets that they can effectively defend. And then the Protoss with their whopping 21 units, which is kind of unfortunate. They can only really defend maybe 2 planets, 2 full planets. So the reason this kind of comes in critical is, well, I'm going to introduce later the terms of what I call a frontline planet and a garrison planet, because it actually will affect these numbers a little bit. And if you play the galaxy out right, you'll see these extra number of planets that they can defend actually can potentially go up. So the reason that's really a big issue for the Protoss is if they can only effectively defend really 2 full planets, then you got to consider that if you really want to punish the opponents to keep them from getting their special victories, you really got to have a situation where you got to be on the move and actually create a front line to where the enemies can't get to your backfield. And that's where the whole active planets, frontline planets versus garrison planets comes in, which I'll talk to you about a little bit later. So, like I said, I keep making up numbers here. So let's dive into the next set of numbers to show you a little bit about their strengths. And what I did was I figured the average unit strength and average unit defense. So, you know, you got these cards here for StarCraft that list off the average attack and defense of each of the units. And what I did is I took each of the units, multiplied their attack by the number of figures you have of that unit, summed them all together, and then I went ahead and calculated the average. Yeah, pretty simple, isn't it? So for the Terrans, I didn't include the Ghosts. So as a result, they have an average attack value of 6.33. And then for the Terrans' defense value, I did end up including the Ghosts, because obviously, like I said, the Ghosts can hold a line and function as a normal defensive unit when they need to be. So that gives their defense a little bit less, actually only 6.22 repeating. So it should be 6.22 repeating, same with the attack, 6.33 repeating. So the Protoss over here, let's look at their attack and defense. And not surprisingly, the Protoss had the most powerful units in the game on a unit per unit basis. So both their attack and defense works out to be 7.28 on average. And then Zerg, let's go over here with their attack and defense. The Zerg are kind of similar to the Terrans, that they have attack of 6.25 on average and a defense of 6.44. The reason their defense is significantly higher than their attack is because what I did for figuring out their attack, I did not include the Scourges in their in this average value, because the Scourges have that special ability where they ram into guys and big explosion. But I did include the defense of the Scourge inside the Zerg's defense value, because obviously the Scourge has a nice defense. They have 8s and 9s, and if you get some special abilities, you can get them almost up to 10 sometimes. So that can really boost up the Zerg position in defense actually using the Scourges. So what does this all mean? I keep making more numbers up. What can we pull from these numbers? Well, in terms of a numerical straight-up fight, if you had one-on-one for either the Zerg or the Terran, if either one's taken on the Protoss, they're almost always going to lose. So if the Zerg or the Terrans actually want to fight the Protoss, they're going to have to take them on almost, you know, essentially 2-to-1 ratio. Whereas the Protoss now, since they have such a high attack and defense, they can pretty much almost, in a one-on-one situation, be guaranteed to defeat the Zerg or the Terrans. So that brings up the question, who is really the strongest defending force in this game? Is it the Terrans, or is it the Protoss, or the Zerg? Which one do you think it is? Well, obviously, the Protoss have the highest numerical defense. But the question is, does that really mean that they're the strongest defensible unit? The answer is really no. And the reason for that is, in almost any given battle, if you're basically a smart player, when you attack the enemy, you're going to be outnumbering them. If you're attacking them with only equal numbers, you're taking a real gamble. And if you're attacking them with less numbers, you're just an idiot. Or you're very desperate, one of the two. So considering that, the fact that it's fairly easy for both the Zerg and the Protoss to really the Zerg and the Terrans to really overwhelm the Protoss, they are only the strongest, most defensible unit, defensible army, if you can present a very solid, non-breaking front line. So let's go back to talk about the Terrans then. So even though in a straight-up battle, the Protoss may be the most defensive, the Terrans are going to be the hardest to dislodge from any given planet. Because, well, any smart player is going to have the little, the air defense module set up, so you can't directly strike at the enemy's base. If they don't have that up and you're attacking them, well, once again, they're an idiot. Therefore, if you really want to overwhelm the Terrans, you got to come in with overwhelming numbers to actually so they can overwhelm their little base, destroy their base, and kick them off the planet. Which the Protoss can be difficult to do because they have such few units. The Zerg are probably the best for that because they actually have the most numerical number of units and can probably do the best job of overwhelming the Terran base. The problem comes in is that in a situation where the Terrans are really, this really applies to anybody, where the enemy base is such a place that the number of maximum units they have in that square is actually greater than all the other maximum unit counts of all the other regions on the planet. So you're almost always going to be fighting a losing battle. Which you can get around if you do really smart playing in the order tokens, but we'll deal with that in a later. So what does this show about the different units? Well, the Protoss, in some ways, they can be tricky to play as because they need to present a very solid front line. You don't want any way for some enemies to get around in the backfield. Because as soon as they get around your front line, they're going to start piecemealing you to the bits, and you're going to find yourself spread thin, and individual units will be here, and all over the place, instead of, you know, a solid area of heavy numbers of units that enemies have to go through. And as soon as you get outnumbered in a situation with the Protoss, you're going to lose. You're just going to go down bit by bit by bit. It's going to be fighting a losing battle all the way. And then, not surprising, the Terrans, then, it can be kind of a very defensive situation where they can build up bases, move from planet to planet, and they'll be able to put up a good fight no matter where they're at. And the Zerg, of course, swarm them with lots and lots of units. You have 9 Zerglings. Use those to boost up your attacks. So those are some more things to consider when you're choosing a faction. So I'm going to leave these numbers up here because we're going to come back to them when we start talking about setting up the galaxy. So let's move on to talking about setting up the galaxy. So we're going to talk a little bit about how you want to place your planets in such a way that they favor you the best. Now, in my article about this, I introduced a few topics. One was the concept of getting boxed in, and the other one was the concept of a meat-only planet. And the meat, well, let's start with the boxed in. This is kind of obvious thinking, but if you're not careful, this could happen to you. I know it seems kind of obvious, but always, always, when you place your home base down, make sure that any of the adjacent planets, you have at least one that does not contain an enemy base. You do not want to start off a situation where you're surrounded by enemies. That's what I mean by boxed in. Because what you're going to do is you're going to start off fighting a very downward, losing battle the entire game. Because you may attack one guy, but that'll leave your home base weak and not defended. And the other guy will come in and just beat down on you, and you're going to find yourself probably dying pretty dang quick. So that's the first rule of thumb. Always make sure there's some place to expand to. Second up was this idea of this meat-only planet. And what I really mean by that is if you can, you want to try to set it up so the planets you can expand to, at least at first, only you and you alone can actually expand to that planet. This is really hugely critical for the Protoss. I mean, it's definitely beneficial to anybody, because if you've got a planet in such a way where only essentially you control initially, that basically if the enemies have to go through another planet to get to you first, or even better, they have to go through your home planet to get to it first, you basically locked off these resources to use whenever you want, and it's just, that gives you almost a free planet to expand to. It makes it a lot easier to capture your special victory. And the reason I say it's critical for the Protoss, come back to this whole idea of the strong front line they have to maintain. Because ideally, this is where the whole concept of frontline planets and garrison planets comes into play. And if you're not really terribly familiar with military terminology, obviously a frontline planet, let's do a little demonstration here. If we had a little war going on, this little orange line here is going to represent the border between two worlds, or sorry, two empires. And on the one side, you got the some red star systems. We'll say like that. And the other side, we'll make it the green alien star systems or whatever. Which show up like crap on this board, but regardless. This little scenario here, frontline planets are any planet that can be immediately be attacked by the enemy. So if we use, let's try blue out. So if let's say the red's launching an invasion against the, what's kind of almost a puke green color. These first planets in the first row here, these first three, are all frontline planets. Because, you know, they can essentially launch their attacks across the board and hit these planets right away. So they go... Whereas now, let's say the war continues on in such a way... They're fighting. Red takes these three planets. And now red can kind of expand on the second set of planets here. So they would concentrate their attacks on the second set of planets, which is one step behind the frontline planets. So, now these new planets they just attack, these become the frontline planets. Because obviously if green wanted to launch a counter-assault, they're going to have to do it probably going through one of these two planets first. So therefore, the frontline planets, obviously red's going to want to concentrate their forces here the most. And then in these planets that have already been conquered, these are going to be called garrison planets. Essentially, you've got a small token military forces on there, really, just to keep the peace and make sure the whole transition of power from the enemy government to your government goes pretty smoothly. So back here, you're going to have probably a fairly small detachment of troops. So you effectively control these planets, you get their resources and whatnot, but they're not under immediate threat from a retaliation of the enemy. And the reason that's so critical in StarCraft, the board game, because you only got so many units. Like I was saying, you know, if I did these numbers here, with the Zerg obviously having maybe 2.5 to 3 planets in control, same with the Terran, only maybe 2 planets of the Protoss. The Protoss really want to get in a situation like this, where they effectively have 2 frontline planets that can have the bulk of their military forces on them, present a nice unified front against the enemy. So we'll make the enemy blue this time. So in such a way that the only way that the enemy can actually attack the Protoss is through these 2 frontline planets. And then chilling in the backfield for the Protoss, you've actually got a little garrison planet here. It has just enough forces on it for you to A, gain the resources, B, gain conquest points, and C, count as controlling those regions. So I'm going to draw a little sample layout of a galaxy over here, and we're going to use that to kind of explain some of this whole idea of the me-only planet. And just to give you a nice visual appearance of what it is. So let's say the Protoss here have a home planet set up here. we will say there's now also, we'll do a little T-shape. The Protoss home planet is going to be up here at the top. One right below is going to be one uncontrolled planet of anybody. Right to the immediate, essentially, well, I guess it depends how you look at the board. I'm going to be looking at the board, so right to the right of the first uncontrolled planet will be a second one, and there will be a connection between those two planets, and one between the Protoss home planet and the first uncontrolled planet. And down here, for kicks, we're going to have, say, a Terran base. It's going to be down here at the bottom. So you've got, essentially, I believe that works out the isopropyl alcohol. Back in the days of organic chemistry. But yeah, so essentially you've got a Terran base and a Protoss base separated by one uncontrolled planet, and off the side here, you've got a second uncontrolled planet. Now, the Protoss player has got to go first. So therefore, their Z-axis navigation marker is going to connect their home planet with the second uncontrolled planet over here. And that gives them a huge advantage. Now, let's say there's no more connection spots available on the second uncontrolled planet. So now the Terrans only have one place to expand to. Well, the Protoss got two. So therefore, if the Terrans want to attack what we'll call this guy uncontrolled planet 1, the one that's in between the Terran and the Protoss, and uncontrolled planet 2 is going to be the one that Protoss only have control of. So if the Terrans want to attack this planet number 2, they're actually going to have to go through and take control, or at least gain some kind of beachhead on planet number 1. Whereas the Protoss can either, ideally they want to go ahead, and they actually do want to fight the Terran forces on planet number 1 here, but also whenever they feel like it now, they got a nice mosey on over here to planet number 2 and start taking advantage of its resources, building. So therefore now they've got a much faster growing military machine, and they can overwhelm the Terran forces pretty easily. And that's the whole idea, because as soon as the Protoss were to control planet number 1, this planet number 2 is now officially a me-only planet. And you basically deny the Terrans the resources of that planet. And now you've got the situation where, you know, you've got, not only, it's cool here, now you've got one frontline planet and one sort of frontline planet on number 2, because the Terrans could jump that one if they got a beachhold on planet number 1. But your home planet is now, quote, a garrison planet. It's no longer under threat from enemy attacks. You don't have to maintain a lot of military units there. Therefore allowing you to use your precious 21 units on the other planets to create a more unified frontline force so the Terrans can't get around and attack you from behind. So that's just a better example of the whole explanation of what a me-only planet is. And of course, this whole mess that I'm explaining here does not just apply just to the Protoss. The Protoss can benefit from it the most because they're low unit count. But you want any faction, whether it be Zerg or Terran, you want to get a situation like this where you can basically block off sections of the galaxy from the enemy. And that's the whole, and that'll really give you a huge advantage because you've got, obviously, more resources than them, more units now, more areas to put units, and you can just kind of slowly overwhelm them and choke them off. And, of course, by denying your enemy's planets, they're not going to be able to fulfill their special victory. And therefore, once again, you won the game because you were able to deny the enemy their special victory. And in the process, you probably gain enough territories to acquire your special victory. Now, let's reverse this scenario a little bit, actually. Take a look at it from the other direction, from the Terran perspective. What the Terrans are going to want to do is actually probably expand to planet number 2 almost as quick as possible. And the reason for that is you want to open up, just like how the Protoss are trying to form a unified front, you want to basically destroy this unified front and basically make the entire area a battleground for the Protoss. Because, you know, you have a superior number of units, and as soon as you make the whole area a battleground for the Protoss, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. Because then you're going to be able to identify little sectors that are have very few or weak troops in there, and you can be able to overwhelm them, hit them, take them out, and start creating total chaos in the backfield of the Protoss. And that will give you a huge advantage. So keep that in mind when you're fighting the Protoss. Obviously, the Protoss will want to build this unified line. The other forces want to disrupt it. The third article I went on with about StarCraft is actually now planning the assault on the galaxy. And I did a little bit of demonstration here, because what I did is I came up with these ideas of different types of planets that you want to go for. Let's see, the concepts were one, what I called a special victory critical planet, a normal victory critical planet, that's a normal victory being the requirement that you got to get the 15 conquest points, a contested planet, and then once again it brought back the terminology of the me-only planet. So the whole plan of these attacks out was based along the idea that you want to deny the enemy their special victory. So if there's a planet that is really helpful for the enemies to obtain their special victory, you want to hit that planet first and take it. I mean, obviously, depending on who you're fighting, it's going to vary from faction to faction. Like, if you're fighting Jim Raynor, you might want to go after Becker Row or Pride Water, two planets that have a lot of resources on them, because that's obviously his special victory. So if you got a planet available to you that can actually deny the enemy their special victory, you want to go ahead and take that first. If you can't, like maybe they're on the other side of the galaxy, or there's, you know, another faction's got another place they can kind of expand to really help out their special victory, go for normal victories. You know, go ahead and take as many control points as possible and deny those from the enemy. It's, you know, it's especially if you play the normal length game, it can be kind of hard to actually win a normal victory, but it's always a possibility. And, you know, it's if you do, always just do something to deny the enemy their victory. Don't ever make it easy for them to actually, you know, get their whatever victory condition they're going for is. So don't just sit back in your home planets and let you build the forces and just sit there. You're never going to win doing that. Always, you know, be on the offensive, attacking where the enemy needs to be. And that's a good point when thinking of it. You may not always want to attack the enemy where they are. You really want to fight them where they need to be. And that comes with the third idea, the whole idea of the contested planet. Now, chances are, all contested planets will probably fall under one of the first two categories, either the special victory required planet or normal victory required planet. But, you know, just in case the situation was not, we find that, it's always better to make the enemy pay for resources. Never, ever let them capture a planet for free. Especially, you know, as I explained the whole idea of this front line stuff here, if you can move on and secure a contested planet, then now you've got this area behind you where that planet you just moved from now becomes a garrison planet, allowing you to free up military resources to the front line. You can move from planet to planet. So that's the other advantage of going after contested planets. It allows you to build a unified front line the enemies have to go through to get to your home planets. With the meat-only planets, you may not want to expand to them right away. Because, like, if you do it right, the meat-only planet should pretty much become a garrison planet right away. So you may only need a few military units over there to guard them, but your first primary objective should be to secure any contested planets. And then hopefully in the process of securing contested planets, you're going to actually make more me-only planets. So as soon as you've got a few extra resources laying around, you want to go ahead and then go ahead and move on to the me-only planets. Because basically if you go for me-only planets first, you're going to probably leave a contested planet open, and the enemies are going to come and take it. And then as soon as the enemies take that, now they became stronger and they're going to be able to come after you. So keep that in mind. You really want to go for the contested planets first. Start fights early. It's kind of ironic, but the more fighting you do in this game, almost the better shot. Let's say, the more fighting on your own terms you do in this game, the much better shot you have of winning this game. So that's a pretty good rundown, kind of a summary of the three articles I talked about. A little more details, a little more drawings and examples, and a bunch of BS numbers that I came up with last night. So hopefully that kind of gives you a better idea of where you're going with your tactics in StarCraft, the board game. But I got a few more minutes here. Might as well keep talking. Let's talk a little bit about planning your turnout. When it comes to planning out your turn, what you're going to want to do is a few quick tips. Always spend resources. Never, ever leave a worker sitting in your worker pool. Because, I mean, obviously, in StarCraft the board game, you can't collect resources. There's really no advantage to not using up every single resource you have every turn. For every resource, you don't use that turn, you lose it, but the enemy is going to be using up theirs, and they're going to be building up a larger and larger war machine. The more turns that they use up, they're all theirs, and you don't. So keep that in mind. And so even if you don't know what to build, or maybe you've reached your maximum build limit, always build a building for every build token you can, if you want. Build the module as much as possible. Or at the very least, just build a bunch of workers. It's never a bad thing to have a lot of workers, because eventually you're going to expand to more planets. You're going to have more resource cards in front of you, which you can actually use then to obviously get more resources. So that's obviously rule number one, which is kind of simple and thought of. But two comes down to plan out what you want to do ahead of time. I mean, if possible, I don't know if it depends on your opponent's going to let you. I would like to write down what I want to do every turn that I can, because there's been times where I've missed a few key critical things, mainly a transport. There's a terminology around here. It's called Poland adjacent, thanks to, I think, Kyle coined that terminology. We all have this massive invasion force on the planet, ready to strike the enemy. But I would have forgot to build the dang transport that turn, and I can't. And basically all my attack tokens are now totally worthless. It's like, oh, fuck. So that's why I like to, if possible, plan out what you want to build ahead of time. And also that way you know exactly how many resources you need to spend that turn, and how many extra ones you have to either A, build more workers, build even more transports, or maybe just do some research and get yourself some cool new technology. Because if you're ever not sure, if you have ever extra resources, you don't really know what you want to do with them, just go into your technology deck and pull something cool out, you know? Like the Zerg, get your Guardian Aspect out, get that little Adrenal Gland upgrade out. If you have the Protoss, get those Observers out there, so... That's why it's always helpful, obviously, to plan out exactly what you want to do in the turn. Another thing to consider is always get out and purchase the little modules that give you those gold tokens, whether it be, say, the Evolution Chamber for the Zerg or the Forge for the Protoss or whatever. Because those gold tokens give you a huge advantage, and I mean a huge advantage. And we're going back to our numbers here, especially when you're going to be fighting the Protoss. I drop stuff so much in this show. So what it does, you know, it gives you a +1 to your attack. So from the Zerg, originally they have an average of 6.25 attack. With a gold token now, they've got a 7.25 attack. And then obviously with the Terrans, they go from a 6.33 up to an average of 7.33. And then with the Protoss, they go from a 7.28 up to an 8.28. And well, with the Protoss, it's never a bad idea that you got a stronger attack that you can really smack down your opponents even better. This is hugely critical for both the Zerg and the Terrans, especially when they launch attack against the Protoss. Now their attack values are nearly identical to the average defense values of the Protoss. And they can almost be guaranteed to be able to go one-on-one with the Protoss. And on top of that, they will probably have more units. If you're intelligent, you'll have more units. And therefore, it's almost these little gold tokens really tip the tide of the battle against the Protoss. It's kind of unfortunate, but so now that's really great for obviously attacking anybody, but it really brings them up to level with the Protoss. Yeah, I guess we'll call that. So let's call that it for the show. I've kind of talked long enough, and hopefully, I helped you out a little bit, getting you thinking about some of the real details of this game. Because one thing cool about StarCraft is there isn't a lot of random ability to this game. So it's not like you can say, okay, well, I may have an attack value of 6.25. That's two markers and one planet I've dropped so far this game. So it's not like I may have an attack value of 6.25. I'm going to have an attack value of 6.25, assuming you plan your cards right. Oh, that's one last little thing I want to mention. One last little tactical tip. When you attack an enemy planet... Oh, two things about attacking an enemy planet. One, always destroy something. Because, you know, you're always on the advantage rear of the attacker in this game, which I mentioned before that I absolutely love. Aggressiveness is the key to winning. So, I mean, if you go ahead and you attack an enemy planet, but you just kind of take an area and don't attack anybody, you're going to find now you're going to be going on the defensive, and you're probably going to be booted off that planet. So, keep that in mind. If it's at all possible, just attack somebody, and ideally attack mass in numbers. Like, I remember this one fun little story where I had four Hydralisks go up against a Protoss carrier. Oh, I brought that carrier down. It was fun. Granted, that action caused me to lose the game, but it was fun in the process. So, hey, what the heck. Why not have some fun if you're going to lose the game anyway? So when you attack a planet, always hit the enemy units. Don't ever just kind of attack there and just be like a presence, because it's really going to leave you in a very more defending spot, and that's a bad thing. And also, when you're spreading your workers out with your resource cards, as it says in the rule book, always use up these 4 and 2 resources that appear on your character card first, and then go to the actual resource cards. And, you know, if you've got a planet that's now a garrison planet, start using those resources up first. And if you have to go to a planet that's a frontline planet, just make sure you're careful where you're putting cards down, or you're putting your workers down. Don't put your workers down on a card where you have no units defending. I've had that happen to other people before, where they basically, like, they have no units in that region on the planet, and they put some workers on there. And I asked them a little zergling, oh, okay, well, I was going to attack the planet anyway. So, okay, well... We'll attack this region of the planet, and we'll put a Zergling over here. Boom! 3 workers are dead, just like that. So, be very careful where you're signing your workers to. That's the last little thing to say. So, I guess that's about it for me for StarCraft for now. I guess I got a lot more talked about in the show than I thought I was going to, so that's a good thing. Hopefully you found it interesting. We're going to get some other shows coming up. We're going to build in a table, like I said. And at some point in the future here, we're going to get both Ryan and Kyle back on, and we're going to each talk about our individual faction abilities, what we like about them, how we fight with them, how we use the various units and whatnot. So that'll be coming in the future to elaborate on all this kind of generic math stuff. Let's just say actually statistics stuff. Now, it's not completely a lot of math. It's a lot of statistics. So once again, thanks for watching. I'm Jason. If you have any questions, comments, or just want to know how the heck I came with all these numbers, send me an email at jason@rockosoftware.com. That's rockosoftware.com. Thanks for watching. We'll see you guys again in about 2 weeks in the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
Copyright 2007-2008 Rocko Software, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
The intro music Down With Everything is by The Transfer and is acquired from www.podsafefighter.com and is used under a Creative Commons license. Blizzard Entertainment, StarCraft, and Blizzard are trademark or registered trademarks of Blizzard Entertainment.